Hello.
This week's parasha is Parashas Mishpatim. We begin on page 416. Ve'ela ha-mishpatim ashatasim lefneyem. And these are the mishpatim, these are the laws, the judgments that you shall place before them. So this week's parasha is the first, call it the first parasha in which mitzvahs are listed. The whole parasha is basically a list of mitzvahs. This is the first list of mitzvahs that we have after the giving of the Torah, after the Aseres HaDibros. This is the first set of mitzvahs that Hashem tells Moshe to put before the Jewish people after the giving of the Torah. And we call these mitzvahs, we call them mishpatim, we call them laws, right? In English, we refer to them as laws. And a law basically means is a body of rules and guidelines by which we live by. That's what law is. Law is a body of rules and guidelines that we live by. And I want to share with you some thoughts from an essay that was written by her of Mordechai Gifter Zatzal of the Telzi Yeshiva. This is an English essay that appeared in a magazine that was once the Orthodox Jewish magazine out called the Jewish Observer, printed by Agudas Yisrael of America. It is no more in print.
Really?
No more in print. I think too much competition from some of the other things. And Art Scroll actually put together a number of articles on business ethics and monetary law, a bunch of many different articles from different people throughout that were printed in the Jewish Observer and collected into one book called The Ethical Imperative. And in that book, you have this essay from Rav Gifter that is entitled Human Law and Torah Law. That's what it's called, Human Law and Torah Law. And from the title, you can see that the point is to contrast the two things, to contrast, to show the differences between how human law or society law sees the purpose of law and how, what is the purpose of Torah law. So I wrote out here, basically, I call it a summary of this essay based on the way I understood what he was trying to impart.
They have to overlap.
Well, let's just see how he now contrasts them. So he begins to say like this. In society, the purpose of law is to bring order to the affairs of people. Where order exists in a society, that society can thrive to its fullest extent. Otherwise, there's chaos. As Pirkei says, if not for fear of government, ish es re'eu chayim b'loi, a person would swallow up his friend alive. You have, in order for a society to thrive, you have to have order. And order is created through the body called law. However, he points out, if all you have is law to create order, then you could actually have laws that are cold and cruel. The Nazis had laws. The Nazis had an order. You know, the mob has an order too, right? There's a certain way how things are done. There's a certain order that has to be, or else nothing can thrive without an order. But it doesn't mean it's going to thrive in a positive way. And therefore, there has to be a set of established moral values for the law to work within. A society has a value system, it has morals, and it's within those morals that law works within. The purpose of law is not to develop these moral standards. Rather, these moral standards have typically been the domain of either philosophy or religion. Philosophy or religion has been what has set the moral standards, and these are the norms that within them law develops and operates. So in order for you to have a system of law, you have to have a certain core values that the law develops within and runs within. That is how societal law works. Its purpose is to basically to work within the moral standards of that society and to keep things in order. However, when it comes to Torah law, or as Rav Gifter also refers to Talmudic law, Torah law is unique that its purpose is actually to develop the man's moral and ethical personality. That is what Torah law is meant to do. It's not just to make order. It's actually meant to develop man's moral and ethical personality. Societal law concerns itself with the world of human relations because its purpose is order. Its purpose is to create an order in society. If its purpose is to create an order in society, so then basically its gamut is human relations, interpersonal relationships, how people will work with each other. Torah law deals with the entire gambit of life. Torah law includes torts, damages. It includes contractual law. It deals with loans. And it also deals, that same law, the same Torah law deals with prayer, rituals, holidays. It's all one body of the body of Torah law encompasses everything in life. A bezdin, right? A court of law, a court of Torah law. What is it empowered to do? It's empowered to enforce a contract or a deal. It's also empowered to enforce someone on sukkahs to build the sukkah if they're not doing it. That's called kaifan ala mitzvahs.
Awesome.
Yeah. In the times where Bezdin had the power, if a person was not performing a mitzvah he was supposed to do, Bezdin could enforce it. So again, the court is not just enforcing the societal order. It's enforcing the entire gamut of what the Torah law includes, whether it's societal, whether it's one's personal obligations to Hashem.
So what's the punishment if you don't put a sukkah up?
Punishment, a positive commandment doesn't have a punishment if you don't do it. But it doesn't mean it can't be enforced. Now, and if you talk about the Bezdin HaGadol, if you talk about the Supreme Court of Torah law, okay, it clearly dealt with interpretation of the law. But the Sanhedrin, the highest court of law, declares war. It has the power to extend the boundaries of Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash. The Torah law embraces all facets of life because its purpose is the development of the person.
Is that enough law without the other law if everybody
follows
this?
No. You have to have both parts of the law. We'll talk about that. Mm-hmm. But the point is, though, that again, societal law is typically seen as dealing with interpersonal relationships in order to keep society in order. While Torah law is the gamut of everything, it's the gamut of Jewish of life. That's because Torah law is meant not just to keep, it's not meant to keep an order, it's rather meant to develop the person. Rav Gifter writes like this, I'm going to quote, "The basic premise of the law is the never-ceasing consciousness that one stands always in the presence of his creator." That's the foundation. That's the premise of Torah law. I stand constantly before my creator. And to ensure that, the law has a complete system regulating the conduct of man, not only in dealing with his fellow man, but also in dealing with himself. It's not just how I deal with others. How do I deal with myself? Now, he adds, and this is, I feel, is a very interesting line, because again, he's talking about how society sees law as how we deal with others. Torah law includes everything. At the same time, he writes, and this is very interesting, "For he who attempts to achieve moral and ethical perfection and integrity in himself will of necessity deal in kind with his fellow man. Society is molded of individuals who build it. An ordered and disciplined personality in the individual guarantees a well-balanced and harmonious society." In other words, what society, the order that society strives to achieve through its human law, as he refers to it, Torah law strives to achieve that also. But it doesn't just, but it tries to achieve it as part of the entire development of the human personality. And when we work on the development of our personality, that is what guarantees that just as I try to work harmonious within myself, I work harmonious with my fellow. Which I think he's trying to point out is that human law, which focus is completely on the interpersonal relationship, and doesn't focus necessarily on the human development, doesn't have that same chance of really creating the proper order that comes about through Torah, when the individuals who are creating the society are themselves being developed in their moral and ethical behavior. A person who's going to be developing his behavior, who's developing himself, and he's trying again, as Rav Gifter writes, just find that wording again. One second, let me finish. Okay. The person who attempts to achieve moral and ethical perfection and integrity in himself, through how the Torah says a person achieves that for himself, will of necessity deal in kind with his fellow man. The same way I am achieving my moral and ethical perfection within myself, that is how I develop myself, that's how I will also behave and involve myself with someone else. Okay? I will also involve myself with someone else with moral and ethical integrity, just like I'm trying to deal that way within myself. And when I deal that way within myself, that will be the best way, the most solid way, the strongest way of developing a moral society. Because a society is made of its individuals. If individuals are perfecting themselves morally and ethically, those are the kinds of people that now, with each other, develop that moral society.
So the higher you go up on the Talmudic level, the lower you have to go on the civil, because theoretically you shouldn't need as much.
You need both parts.
No, but you need, for instance, like policemen, hopefully you need less policemen if you're
Okay. That's what you mean. In that sense, okay. But that you're not, but it's not less in how you are involving, how you're treating your fellow man. Mm-hmm. It's not less in how society is dealing with each other. Yes, the more society deals properly with each other, you're right, you don't need the policemen, as much policemen.
Right.
Okay, that's true. Okay. This Rav Gifter says is what Torah law is about. Torah law is about developing the person morally and ethically. Now, he continues and says, the ultimate authority of Torah law is the commandment of God. The law, or we'll refer to the mitzvahs of the Torah, they are the revelation of the divine will that demands of man to raise himself above the level of beast. That is what the Torah wants from us. The mitzvahs of the Torah are there to perfect us morally, ethically, as a human being should be, as a tzelem Elokim, as a person created in the image of Hashem, should be. When you get to discussing what he refers to as Talmudic law, okay, Talmudic discussion and Talmudic law formed from that discussion is the attempt to understand the will of God revealed in the written Torah and to apply it. Okay, we've got the revelation of Hashem's will in the mitzvahs of the Torah. That part of the law is the revelation of Hashem's will. And Talmud and Talmudic law is that effort to understand the will of God revealed in the Torah and to apply it. And he brings this idea out in the following way. He says, if you look at Rambam, you look at the works of Maimonides. So the Rambam wrote a comprehensive code of Talmudic law called the Yad HaChazaka. When we talk about the laws of the Rambam, and we refer to the Rambam says this and this halacha, it's coming from the code of Talmudic law that he called the Yad HaChazaka. Preceding the Yad HaChazaka, you have what the Rambam wrote called the Sefer HaMitzvahs, the Book of Mitzvahs. In the Book of Mitzvahs, the Rambam contains the principles in determining what is counted as one of the 613 mitzvahs, and then he enumerates them all. Now, if you look in the code of the Rambam's laws, the Yad HaChazaka, so it's divided up into a number of parts, into a number of sections. Before each section, the Rambam enumerates which mitzvahs are contained in this section of his code of Talmudic law. So what that tells us is that all the laws that the Rambam codified were meant to elaborate on the mitzvahs of the Torah.
And footnotes.
Yeah. That is, not footnotes, elaboration.
But to tell where it came from.
No, the Rambam doesn't tell you where it comes from. The Rambam is elaborating on the details of each mitzvah. And therefore, they're there. And this is really the pattern of what Talmud is about. Talmud is about the fact that the mitzvahs of the Torah are the revelation of Hashem's will, and the Talmud is the effort to understand that will of Hashem that directs the conduct of man. That's what Talmudic law is about. Again, it's also part. It's all part of the development of the moral and ethical personality. It starts with the revelation of Hashem's will and the mitzvahs that are guiding a person how to develop himself. And the Talmud is meant to try to understand those mitzvahs, to understand that will of Hashem that directs the conduct of man. Now, the Sefer of Gifta then brings down a famous Gemara in Bava Metzia. The Gemara in Bava Metzia is on Daf Pei Gimel Amud Aleph. And the Gemara there says like this. The Gemara talks about the sage Rabbi Bar Chana. The Gemara says, "Tavrulei hani shikulai chavita dechamra." They dropped and smashed one of his barrels of wine. These people were working for him. They were carrying the barrels. They were responsible for the barrels, and they broke this barrel, which they were responsible to pay for. They were responsible for it. Shoko leglimayu. So Rabbi Bar Chana went ahead and he took collateral. He took their garment as a payment, which he had halachically the right to do. They broke his barrel. They were negligent. They needed to pay for it. They weren't paying for it. So he seized one of their possessions as a payment, which he was permitted halachically to do. Asur amalei l'rav. So they went, these workers, they took Rabbi Bar Chana to Rav for a din Torah, for a court. Omar lei, so Rav said to Rabbi Bar Chana, havlu limayu, give them back their garment, give it back. Omar lei, so Rabbi Bar Chana said back to Rav, dina hachi, is this the law? Omar lei in, yes it is, and he quoted him a pasuk, leman teilech b'derech tovim. This is a pasuk in Mishle, so that you shall walk in the way of good. The way of b'derech tovim, the way of good people. Rashi says, you know what that pasuk is referring to when it says so that you should walk in the way of good people? You should go beyond the letter of the law. So he did not have to give back the garment, but he gave it back beyond the letter of the law. Okay. So he gave them back their garments. Amrulei. Now again, these workers said to Rav, Ani Anan, we're poor. V'tachinu kula yoyma, we worked the whole day. V'kafina, we're hungry. V'leslan midi, and we have nothing to buy food with. Hey, bottom line, right? You know, they gave him back the garment, but they weren't going to get paid for it. They couldn't get paid for what they did. You know, they didn't accomplish anything, apparently. Omar le zil hava grayu, pay them. Omar le dina hachi, is this the law? Omar le, Rav said back to Rabbi Rachana, in yes. The second half of that same pasuk, the second half of the pasuk he mentioned before, V'orchei tzadikim tishma, you shall guard the ways of the righteous.
Of the what?
Righteous. Now, it's very clear that Rabbi Bar Chana was being told to act lifti mishura sadim, beyond the letter of the law. He didn't have to give them back their garment. He didn't have to pay them. Because at the end of the day, apparently they didn't get anything done. And each time Rav told him, give them back the garment, pay them, this is what you should do.
Because they're poor people?
Because they're poor. Now, wait a second. Now, the thing is, as Rashi says, this is lift the mishuresen, this is beyond the letter of the law. But still, each time, when Rabbi Bar Chana asked Rav, Dina hachi, is this the law? He says, yes. But it's not yes. It's not the law. It's beyond the letter of the law. So what does it mean, Dina hachi? Is this the law? And he says, yes, this is the law. It's not the law. It's beyond the letter of the law. So good. The person's poor. They're therefore giving back the garment, give them food. But that's beyond the letter of the law, as Rashi says. That's not Dina. That's not the law. The answer is that for Rabbi Bar Chana, this was the din. This was the law. Because Rev Gifter says the law is meant to perfect the individual. It's not just about keeping the order, because in keeping the order in this case, there was no reason to do anything from the point of order. Mm-hmm. But from the point of the development of the person that Torah law and Talmudic law is really about, for Rabbi Bar Chana, who already showed what kind of high moral standards he possessed, so for him, law, which is meant to perfect him even further, dictates that he should go beyond the letter of the law. But for him, it's what the law says he should be doing. Because since law is not just about equity between people, it's not just about dealing with society, it's about developing the person. So for a person like Rabbi Bar Chana, what does the law dictate? What is he to do? He is to go beyond the letter of the law. But for him, that's law. For him, that's what he's supposed to do. Because law is a Torah law, Talmudic law, is about developing the moral character of a person.
Maybe it happened before, and they said you couldn't take it because you didn't tell them before.
Instance, that's not the case here. But Barry, that doesn't say that here.
But even I was thinking in America, when a person goes, let's say goes bankrupt, in some states, you could take everything except your house. It's sort of the same idea.
No. I don't know about that. I mean, it could be the same idea, but
dignity
it may all be
for a poor person or something like that.
Good. So that's also go beyond the letter of the law. That's right. To a certain degree, and again, it's because it's a certain type of I'm not going to take away that there isn't a certain amount of how the values of society, right, which are to have a certain amount of mercy on a person down in the dumps. Mm-hmm. Now the law says, okay, within that set of values, this is what we have to do. But again, it's about keeping an order. And yet the whole gamut of Torah law is about developing the person. It doesn't mean that in societal law there aren't certain moral and ethics that we work within. Otherwise, the law could be misused. But again, the law is about keeping the order within the moral code of that society. While Torah law is about developing the person.
Isn't every case maybe different? Let's say if there weren't poor people and he had this.
But that's the point. The point is that if he wouldn't be a poor person, there would be no moral reason to have to go in and do that. But again, my point I'm trying to say here is the fact that it's called dina. It's called din.
Right.
That's the point that's being brought out here. In this situation, not a moral din. The point is that din, law, is about developing the person. Therefore, for this person, it's not just called, oh, you're doing a chesed, you're doing a good deed. It's more than that. It's din, it's law. It's what the law would dictate for this person. Because law is about perfecting the person. And therefore, law says to a person like Rabbi Bar Chana, this is what you need to do. Okay. Now, let me continue. Okay. Therefore, says Rabbi Gifter, if Torah law, Talmudic law, is about developing the person, then when you look at human law, who studies human law? Law students want to become lawyers. That's who studies law. For us, where law is about developing each and every person, so yes, you have courts, you have rabbis, but every person has to now study the law. Because every person needs the law to perfect him, to perfect his moral and ethical personality, to perfect who he is, to help him be conscious of the fact that he stands before Hashem always. And the result of a person studying Torah is he brings out with the following famous story brought down in Avos de Reb Nosson. Avos de Reb Nosson talks about the beginnings of Rabbi Akiva. And this is in Avos de Reb Nosson.
He came after Rabbi Akiva?
Excuse me?
He wrote after Rabbi Akiva? Like Rabbi Akiva was about 18, 19 years ago. When was this?
I'm sorry?
Rabbi Akiva.
Rabbi Akiva of the Gemara.
But Rabbi Akiva, who learned Hebrew at 40 years old?
Well, what we're talking about now, right.
Okay. So he wrote after Rabbi Akiva was alive?
Who, Avos Reb Nosson?
I'm curious how many years.
You're talking about Avos Reb Nosson?
Yeah.
I don't know how many years afterwards, but it's definitely afterwards. That's correct. Okay. So Ma'ayot chilasos Rabbi Akiva. What was the beginning of Rabbi Akiva? Amru, they said, ben arbaim shana hayav alay shana klum. 40 years old, he didn't learn a thing. Pamachas ha'yo'emir al-pi ha'be'er. He was once standing by a well or by a body of water. And basically, Omar mi'chokak evin zu. What he saw was, there was stone. And basically, something had hewn out, had bored a hole in this rock. And now there was water gathering in this rock. So he said, who made this hole in the rock? It's the water. There was water that was constantly dripping on, and eventually it wore it away and created a hole, and now this is where the water gathered. Seeing that, Rabbi Akiva now took a lesson to himself. Something soft like water can make a hole in something hard like a rock. Divrei Torah shekasha kabarzel. The words of Torah that are considered or called as hard, as strong as iron. Alachas kama v'kama sheyachakaku eslibi shubasa v'dam. Well, the more so they will be able to bore out a hole, they'll be able to work out my heart.
Over a long time,
usually. Well, over whatever it means, in the what case, and if water has the power to go ahead and make the hole in the rock, Torah for sure is going to have the ability to penetrate my heart. And Rabbi Akiva understood that what did he do after that? He started learning. Okay, so Rabbi Akiva understood that it's going to be the power of learning, the power of continuous, endless learning that's going to make a person's heart the receptacle for the living waters of moral and ethical perfection. That's what he understood. That is, so again, being that the Torah law, the Talmudic law, is about perfecting us, it's the domain of everyone, and when a person learns, and learns sincerely, and learns seriously, the words of Torah have the ability to penetrate his heart. They can now develop that kind of person that we need to, that the Torah wants. And Rav Gifter cites a Rambam. I could not find it inside, but he brings a translation of the Rambam's words like this. It is characteristic of every human being that when his interest is engaged in the ways of wisdom and righteousness, he yearns for those ways and is eager to follow them. Meaning the Rambam is telling us, when you study Torah and you seriously study Torah, the more engaged you come, the more engaged you become in the wisdom of Torah, the more you want to live by that wisdom. So he concludes, or will conclude, this discussion with the fact that the word for law is Torah. The meaning of Torah is to teach, to guide. The laws of Torah guide a person in every facet of life to realize his essence of being created in the image of Hashem. That is how we're created. Our essence is to be image, is we're created in the image of Hashem, and we realize that image, we perfect ourselves, we realize that image through the body of Torah law. So the body of Torah law, in contrast, societal law is to create order in society. Torah law is about perfecting a person's character. It's about creating a personality that is the personality, is a person that stands constantly in front of Hashem, a person who truly lives according to his Tzelem Elokim, the image of Hashem he's created in. And that is the perfection, the moral and ethical perfection of one's personality. And that is what Torah law is meant to do. That's its purpose. And therefore, it encompasses the entire gambit of life. What do you want to say?
No, isn't everybody different? Everybody starts with a certain...
Everybody's thing. Different, but the point is that the goal of Torah is to perfect each person according to who they are. But it's all about, again, it's not just about keeping things in order. Mm-hmm. It's about creating that moral Torah personality.
Do we know what Rabbi Akiva did before he was 40 years old?
He was a shepherd.
Shepherd.
Yeah. Okay. Let's now move on. To Perek Chaf Beis, Pasuk Chaf Beis. Okay, this is page 430. Pasuk Chaf Aleph, actually. Verse 21. Kol Almana V'Yasayim Lo Yisa'anun. Any widow or orphan you shall not pain. Now, Rashi brings down, it's important to know, Hu adin l'chol adam. When we talk about not causing pain, we're not just talking about a widow or an orphan, we're talking about anyone. El-shadibra ha-kasav b'haive. But rather, the Torah talks about, so to speak, the most common case, l'fishem teshushe kayach, v'davra matzi la'noisem. They're weak, and it's very common that people take advantage of them, cause affliction to them. So the Torah is really talking about not causing affliction to anyone in a weakened state. The Torah specifically talks about a widow and an orphan because they are your most classic case of a person who's in a very sensitive and weak state of being. So the Torah talks about the widow, talks about the orphan, but again, as Rashi says, it's anyone who's in this very weak state of down and weak state. Now, let's continue reading. If you shall surely pain him, for if they cry, they surely cry out to me, I will surely hear his cry. Okay? It's very interesting, this double wording three times in the Pasuk. If pain, you pain him. For if cry, he cries out. Hear, I shall hear. We know when the Torah may use a double wording, it's trying to say, it's trying to stress surely. But it's very interesting how you have all these three things in this double form, in one pasuk. So I say it's brought down from the Kutzker Rebbe that the Torah is trying to point out like this. When you cause affliction, when you afflict a widow and an orphan, there is a double pain going on. There is the pain of the affliction itself, and there is also, when they're afflicted, they're reminded of the fact that they have lost a parent or lost a husband. And as the Kutzker says, they think in their minds, if I wouldn't be so vulnerable because I'm an orphan, this wouldn't be happening to me. And therefore, whenever they are pained by someone, it's a double pain. It's the pain of the affliction itself, and it's the pain of being reminded of their loss. Therefore, the Torah used the double wording. Im ane sa'ane. If afflicted, you shall afflict. There's a double affliction here. Kim tzayik yitzak. If cry, you shall cry. He's going to be crying for two things. Shemaya eshma. Hear, I will hear. I will hear the two things. I will pay attention to the affliction itself, and to the second affliction of being reminded over their loss. Okay. Another interesting part in this pasuk is the wording, ki im tsa'ik yitzak. The Vilna Gaon asks, the pasuk should read like this, im ane sa'ane yosai, if you afflict him, im tsa'ik yitzak elai, if he cries out to me, I will hear his cry. What is the word ki doing there? For, because, right? It doesn't need to be there. Again, the way you translate it, if you dare to cause him pain, for if he shall cry out. What's the for? What do you need the for? We need that word key. So the Vilna Gaon says, it's coming to allude to the following. In Sefer Shmuel, before the birth of Shmuel, we read the story of Shmuel's parents, Chana and Elkanah. Elkanah had two wives, Chana and Penina. Penina had children, Chana didn't. And Penina, we read in the Sefer Shmuel, used to afflict. She used to taunt Chana over the fact that she didn't have children. The Gemara says that Penina's intention was not to be mean and cruel. Her intention was she felt that Chana was not davening, or davening properly. And Penina felt that the only way to get Chana to really get to daven, which eventually is what she did, is by taunting her, is by paining her, by causing her the pain. Oh, cool. If she feels the pain, then she will be motivated to daven because she's not davening. Mm-hmm. But we know at the end of the day that Penina was not correct because we know how Penina lost all her children and Chana basically had a child for each child that Penina lost. Because at the end of the day, even if you intend for good purposes, you cannot cause affliction to someone. You can't afflict someone like that. You know, one has to think about, as a parent, as a teacher, how that exactly fits in. But again, to cause affliction, to cause pain for someone, even for a purpose of, even for the Shem Shemayim, we know a parent actually, you know, if a parent has a certain degree of permission to do that, a Rebbe has a certain degree of permission to do that, it's a permission granted to them. Outside of that permission, or beyond even what they should be doing, that affliction, even if, again, your intention is to motivate the person to the right thing, you can't do that through causing someone pain. Therefore, the Goyin says, the reason the Torah instituted the word ki is so that you should read the pasuk like this. Imani sa'ana yosei, if you cause him pain, ki imtza kitzak aylai, because if he'll cry out to me, meaning if you cause him pain, because you want to get him to cry out. Because. Nope, still no good. Shmaya eshat zakasai. I will hear his cry. I will hear it. And I will hear it not just to answer his cries. I will hear it to punish you for the affliction that you caused. So that's what the key is coming to say. The key is coming to allude to say, if you pain him because you want to get him to cry out, you want to get him to daven? No, I will hear his cry, and as the next pasuk says, I will be angry and punish you.
So the only way to do it is like honey, not vinegar.
Yeah, something. Something. Okay. Now, once we're on this topic of the pain of a widow and an orphan, I'm going to share with you where my friend has two very interesting stories about how great people perceived helping widows and orphans. Reb Chaim Zagrodzhensky of Vilna was, before World War II, the leader of Lithuanian Jewry and World Jewry. And he wrote a sefer called Achiezer, which, again, he deals with many difficult halachic questions. And Reb Chaim Zagrodzhensky said when he was old, for years, I thought my entry to Eilam Abba, to the world to come, would be my Achiezer, that Torah work that I produced. However, now I believe it is the money I raised for widows and orphans throughout Europe that will get me into Eilam Abba. That's how important it is. And then he also brings down for Becheskel Abramsky, who was a student of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. And he said in his eulogy on Reb Chaim, that Reb Chaim was a very humble person, and he never used his title. If he ever introduced himself, he used his name. In correspondence, he used his name. Never referred to himself as the Rav of Brisk, the Av Bezdin of Brisk. One time he did. One time in the city of Brisk, there was a widow. She was very down. Reb Chaim went to visit her to cheer her up. And before he came to her house, he sent his attendant ahead to let her know that Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, the Brisker Rav, the Av Bezdin, the Chief Justice of Risk, is coming. All that was to make her feel good. It was to build her up, to make her feel good. That is when he was willing to use his titles. Other than that, never. Again, the importance of supporting, empathizing, encouraging, and strengthening a widow and orphan, and as Rashi says, anyone who is down and who's vulnerable.
I wonder how to stop this.
Barry, help us.
Oh.